Hi, and welcome to Creepify. Each week we will dive into anything and everything that is, well, creepy. These stories will be a spine chiller, something that will make you think and maybe hide under the covers. Don't be surprised if some episodes make the little hair stand up, and you feel someone might be watching you. Now, with your nerves on edge and attention grabbed, I'm Brandon Smith, and this is Creepify. Just like in our society today, we have different tiers of classes among citizens. You have the top being the wealthy class, and the bottom being the struggling poor class. In 1888 of Whitechapel, this location was the poorest of London on the east side. Unlike today, in 1888, if you were part of the poor class, no one cared if you was dead or alive, especially those from the wealthy class. This attitude opened the doors and set the playing field for a gentleman that later would snag the nickname Jack the Ripper. Gas lamp streets and dark, foggy alleys didn't offer the residents of Whitechapel an inspiring backdrop by which to lead their lives. The area was steeped in poverty and all manner of crime and disease. Growing up in the part of London offered a challenge in itself. Many children were seen as a strain on their parents' resources, and it is believed that 2 in every 10 died before reaching 5 years old. Victorian London was not a happy place to be, and the facts speak for themselves. Prostitution was rife, poverty and crime were prevalent, and the 19th century housing was barely habitable. Finding work in 1888 was extremely difficult for the residents of Whitechapel. Feeding into the cycle of the destitution and depravity, Whitechapel offered a breeding ground for crime and poor behavioral habits, including murder, prostitution, and violence. And vicious circles like these were rarely broken in such poor districts. The streets were unimaginably dirty. Fresh food was hard to come by. Pollution and the smell of sewage hung in the air. Life was much harder for women. The lack of proper work and money led many women and girls into prostitution, a service in high demand by those wishing to escape their grim realities. The woman, commonly referred to as unfortunates, owned only what they wore and carried in their pockets. Their deeds would pay for their bed for the night. Unorthodox abortions were performed in dirty facilities, including the back streets. This, of course, fed into the cycle of disease, and many women would die of infection from these ill-performed surgeries or from ingesting chemicals or poison. While the streets were lined with starving, penniless inhabitants of the drab and dark capital, the insides of the houses throughout the borough were no less inviting and more reminiscent of slums. Many were makeshift brothels, offering a bed and a room to those wishing for a short-term escape. However, this was a dangerous trade, as diseases were passed from person to person very quickly. Doctors did not come cheap. Housing was extremely overcrowded, with entire families or groups of strangers crammed into a single room for cooking, eating, and sleeping. They would share beds or sleep on the floor, with rags covering broken windows, and often flee in insect-infested environments. These damp and cold conditions offered an ideal climate for further disease and sickness to develop. Surviving in the late 19th century often, came through casual or sweated labor, like tailoring, boot making, and making matchboxes. These professions came with very little job security, and the work premises would be more likely be small and cramped, dusty rooms with little to no natural light. Workhouses were another alternative. It set up to offer food and shelter to the poorest of the community in return for hard, grueling labor and even worse conditions. These horrible working and living conditions resulted in large portions of population turning to drinking and drugs to cope with everyday life. Pub and music halls were many a number in the East End, And the drink was cheap too, making it a viable means of escapism for many. It comes as no surprise that in result, crime rates spiraled and were unmanageable by London's police force in 1888. Petty crime like street theft was a commonplace, alongside more serious disturbances like alcohol-related violence, gang crime, and even protection rackets. The high level of prostitution meant that vulnerable women were often forced to earning a living on the streets, leaving them easy targets for assault, rape, or even murder. It is noted that all of Jack the Ripper's victims were addicted to alcohol. Some believe this would have made them easier targets for the killer. Police stations and the detectives at the helm lacked structure and organization, with many crimes being mislabeled, evidence going missing, or being tampered with, and in the case of Jack the Ripper, violent serial killers left to roam the streets of London. The maze of dingy alleyways and dark courtyards, each with the multiple entrances and exit points, only made the district even more difficult to police. These were even some parts of the Whitechapel that police officers were afraid to enter, making them crime hotspots. In the mid-19th century, Britain experienced an influx of Irish immigrants who swelled the populations of the major cities, including the East End of London. From 1882, Jewish refugees from Russia and other areas of Eastern Europe immigrated into the same area. The parish of Whitechapel in London's East End became increasingly overcrowded. Work and housing conditions worsened, and significant economic underclass developed. Robbery, violence, alcohol dependency were, commonplace. Poverty drove many women to prostitution. In October 1888, London's Metropolitan Police Service estimated that there were 62 brothels and 1,200 women working as prostitutes in Whitechapel. The economic problems were accompanied by a steady rise in social tensions. Between 1886 and 1889, frequent demonstrations led to police intervention and public unrest, such as that of the 13th of November in 1887. Crime, nativism, racism, social disturbance, and severe deprivation influenced public perceptions that Whitechapel was a notorious den of immorality. In 1888, such perceptions were strengthened when a series of vicious and grotesque murders attributed to Jack the Ripper received coverage in the media. The large number of attacks against women in the East End during the times adds uncertainty to how many victims were actually killed by the same person. 11 separate murders, stretching from the 3rd of April 1888 to the 13th of February of 1891, were included in the London Metropolitan Police Service investigation and were known collectively in the police docket as the Whitechapel Murders. Opinions vary as to whether these murders should be linked to the same culprit, but 5 of the 11 Whitechapel murders, known as the Canonical Five, are widely believed to be the work of Jack the Ripper. Most experts point to deep throat slashes, abdominal and genital area manipulation, removal of internal organs, and progressive facial mutilations as the distinctive features of the Rippers. The first two cases of the Whitechapel murders file, those of Emma Elizabeth Smith and Martha Tabram, are not included in the Canonical Five. Smith was robbed and sexually assaulted in Osborne Street in Whitechapel on April 3rd, 1888. A blunt object was inserted. She died the following day at the London Hospital. She said that she had been attacked by 2 or 3 men, one of whom was a teenager. The attack was linked to the later murders by the press, but authors attribute to a gang violence unrelated to the Ripper case. Tabron was killed on August 7th, 1888. She suffered 39 stab wounds. The savagery of the murder, the lack of obvious motive, and the closeness of the location and date to those of the later Ripper murders led the police to link them. The attacks differ from the Canonical murders into the Tabron was stabbed rather than slashed at the throat and abdomen. And the many experts do not connect it with the later murders because of the difference in the wound pattern. The Canonical Five Ripper victims are Mary Ann Nicholas, Anna Chapman, Elizabeth Stride, Catherine Eddowes, and Mary Jane Kelly. Nicholas's body was discovered about 3:40 a.m. on Friday, the 31st of August, in 1888. in Bucks Row, Whitechapel. The throat was severed by two cuts, and the lower part of the abdomen was partly ripped open by a deep, jagged wound. Several other incisions on the abdomen were caused by the same knife. Chapman's body was discovered about 6 a.m. on Saturday, the 8th of September in 1888, near a doorway in the backyard of 29 Hanbury Street, Biddlefields. As in the case of Mary and Nicholas, the throat was severed by two cuts. The abdomen was slashed entirely open, and it was later discovered that the uterus had been removed. At the inquest, one witness described seeing Chapman about 5:30 a.m. with a dark-haired man, a shabby, gentle appearance. Stride and Eddowes were killed in the early morning of Sunday, September 30th, 1888. Stride's body was discovered about 1 a.m. in Duffield's yard off of Burner Street in Whitechapel. The cause of death was one clear-cut incision, which severed the main artery on the left side of the neck. The absence of mutilations to the abdomen has led to uncertainty about whether Stride's murder should be attributed to the Ripper or whether he was interrupted during the attack. Witnesses thought that they saw a Stride with a man earlier that night but gave differing descriptions. Some said her companion was fair, others dark. Some said that he was shabbily dressed, others said well-dressed. Eddowes' body was found in Mitre Square in the city of London, 3/4 of an hour after Stride's. The throat was severed and the abdomen was ripped open by a long, deep, jagged wound. The left kidney and the major part of the uterus has been removed. A local man named Joseph Lawland had passed through the square with two friends shortly before the murder. He described seeing a fair-haired man of shabby appearance with a woman who may have been Eddowes. His companions were unable to confirm his description. Eddowes and Stride's murders were later called the double event. A section of Eddowes' bloodied apron was found in the entrance to a tenement in Golston Street, Whitechapel. A chalk inscription upon the wall directly above the piece of apron became known as the Golston Street graffiti and seemed to implicate a Jew or Jews, but it was unclear whether the graffiti was written by the murderer or as he dropped the apron piece, or was merely incidental. Such graffiti was commonplace in Whitechapel. Police Commissioner Charles Warren feared the graffiti marks would spark anti-Semitic riots and ordered it to wash away before dawn. Kelly's mutilated and disemboweled body was discovered lying on the bed in a single room where she lived, 13 Miller's Court off of Dorset Street, Spiritfields, 10:45 a.m. on Friday, November 9th, 1888. The throat was been severed down to the spine and the abdomen almost emptied of its organ. The heart was missing. The Canonical Five murders were perpetrated at night, so on close to a weekend, either at the end of the month or a week. The mutilations became increasingly severe as a series of murders proceeded, except for the Stride, whose attacker may have been interrupted. Nicholas was not missing any organs. Chapman's uterus was taken. Eddowes had her uterus and kidney removed, and her face was mutilated. And Kelly's body was extensively cut open, with her face hacked beyond recognition and the tissue of her neck being severed to the bone. Although the heart was the sole body organ missing from that crime scene. Historically, the belief was these five crimes were committed by the same man is derived from the contemporary documents that leaked them together to the exclusion of others. In 1894, Sir Melville MacNaughton, Assistant Chief Constable of the Metropolitan Police Service and head of the Criminal Investigation Department, wrote a report that stated the Whitechapel murderer had five victims, and five victims only. Canonical five victims were linked together in a letter written by police surgeon Thomas Bond to Robert Anderson, head of the London CID, on November 10, 1888. Some researchers have thought that some of the murders were undoubtedly the work of a single killer, but an unknown larger number of killers acting independently were responsible for the others. Stuart P. Evans and Donald Rumbelow argue that the Canonical Five is a Ripper myth, and that three cases, Nicholas, Chapman, and Eddowes, can be definitely linked by their less certainty over striding Kelly. Dr. Percy Clark, assistant to the examining pathologist George Baxter Phillips, linked only three of the murders and thought that the others were induced to emulate the crime. Magneton did not join the police force until the year after the murders. Kelly is generally considered to be the Ripper's final victim, and it is assumed the crimes ended because of the culprit's death, or imprisonment, institutionalization, or immigration.
I hope you enjoyed this week on Creepify. I hope I struck a nerve, or gave you that feeling as if you're glad it's daylight, or you're freaked out because it's nightfall. If you have a creepy story you want me to tell as a segment in Creepify, then send me a DM on Twitter, or a story you've heard of or experienced yourself, and I'll read it aloud in my episodes. Now you can subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Podbean, or wherever else you listen to your podcasts, all for free. Now, if you feel need to support my show, you can do so on my Patreon. Now, if you're waiting for my next episode to drop, feel free to check out my other podcast I host. It's called Loot News, L-E-W-T News, for an upbeat, kinda scary, social podcast. But until next episode, just remember to stay safe and watch out for the darkness.